Hello and welcome to our second episode of Season 2 of the Fast Fill. Fast Fill is a podcast series sponsored by Natural Gas Vehicles for America, the national organization dedicated to the development of a growing, profitable, and sustainable marketplace for vehicles powered by natural gas and biomethane. And we're also big on promoting the use of more natural gas across all transportation applications. I'm your host, Dan Gage, president of NGV America. And joining me today is Elam Yeo, the Director of Global Renewables Partnerships at Chevron. We're pleased that Chevron is a new member of NGV America. Welcome, Elam.
Thank you for having me, Dan.
I'm pleased to have you with us. And we are, like I said, excited to have Chevron as a member. In your new role, Elam, you lead the sales, marketing, and partnerships efforts to help build Chevron's renewable fuels business. You're responsible for delivering full value chain P&L for the renewable natural gas business and also operationalizing Chevron's renewable fuel strategy. Tell us how you came to work in the oil and gas industry and how your career has evolved to your position today.
Yeah, great to share. We'll start from the early college days. I always thought I wanted to be in healthcare to help those in need. So I spent hundreds of hours volunteering at the University of California in San Francisco, where I went to high school and was on a pre-med chemical engineering track. And then I was invited to a Malaysian Student Association intern event, and Shell connected with me and said, hey, would you be interested in coming down to the Gulf of Mexico for a summer internship? And not knowing a whole lot about Shell or the oil and gas industry, I found myself working on an oil platform in the Gulf. And one of the
about a new opportunity.
Right. And I was only 17 at that time. So it was so much to learn. And I was intrigued by the span of business, the ability to be in global positions. And as I was trying to figure things out, I was building a new water filtration system as a 17-year-old pretty early on in my engineering track. So the autonomy and ability to influence really appealed to me, and it's proven to be true. And so after that internship, I joined Chevron right out of college. Mm-hmm. 20 years old, and have been in a variety of different assignments all over the world. So that was why I decided to join the industry.
That's really neat. And it's funny. I have a background in healthcare too, and thought healthcare was going to be of really particular interest to me when I got my master's in public administration. I got a second degree in health services management and policy, and that was my track until I sort of found myself in transportation, and then sort of found myself not only in a new transportation role, but also with the energy component. So, I think there are a lot of similarities there. It's really interesting. And I always like to ask people about their backgrounds, because I think it shows an evolution and a transition. And you know, Chevron's roots, they date back all the way to the Pacific Coast Oil Company. I did a little bit of research because I want to be prepared for our conversation. But it was incorporated in San Francisco in 1879. And that was the real start of, I guess, this rush for black gold, crude oil, right, which followed the California gold rush of the 1860s. But over time, Pacific Coast merged with the larger Standard Oil Company. And if a lot of folks will remember, Standard became known for its Red Crown gasoline retail outlets, a big impact on the aviation fuels market, especially during the war efforts, right, of World War I, World War II. In 1977, the company officially became Chevron. You merged with Gulf Oil in 1984. And in the 1980s, Chevron was the number one U.S. oil refiner and marketer, as well as the nation's market leader in gas liquids, all fossil based. And then by 2000, Chevron had officially merged with its longtime partner, Texaco. And I share this because, you know, Chevron and its partner brands are all part of American business lore. America's oil and gas history is really Chevron's history. So, you know, we're now in this new age of understanding climate change and the impact fossil fuels has on that. What does the future hold then for Chevron? What does Chevron, in your view, look like 10, 20, 30 years from now?
A really good question, Dan. I believe that the future of energy is lower carbon, and mm-hmm. Chevron's new line is higher returns, lower carbon. And the lower carbon future it needs to be driven by affordable, reliable, and ever cleaner energy to achieve a more prosperous and sustainable world, right? So because of billions of people worldwide rely on natural gas and oil, and we will continue to do so for decades to come. And so to answer your question, I think it's so important to reduce the carbon intensity of these sources, mm-hmm. which represents a tremendous opportunity to advance the global net zero ambitions of the Paris Agreement. And I will share more about some of the areas that we have participated in mm-hmm. As we progress this conversation.
So last October, you engaged me, thankfully, and you were a panelist at our virtual industry summit, and you headlined an energy transition session, which I thought was just really, really interesting. So much neat information that you shared with us then. And I'm hoping you can share some of that with us now. What is driving this transition, in your opinion, to lower carbon fuels? What are some of the most interesting developments that you're seeing as a result of these low carbon or net zero carbon trends?
I'll start with our sustainability goals. Mm-hmm. We favor results over pledges, and we strive for actions that drive progress toward a lower carbon future. And I look at it in three core areas to help achieve our goals. And the three are, one, reducing the carbon intensity of our operations and assets, which I just mentioned earlier. And then two is increasing the use of renewables and offsets in support of our business and our customers' business. And it really stands to be the whole value chain. Mm-hmm. And invest in low carbon technologies to drive commercial scale. And these actions, I believe, will make energy and global supply chains way more sustainable, and in turn, helping industries that use our products build a lower carbon world that we all desire.
Forecasters are predicting that the world's energy demand could increase by one third by 2040. That's less than 20 years from now. And you mentioned earlier on, you mentioned three words that I jotted down: affordable, reliable, ever cleaner, right? So how do we address these climate concerns that are so important, but also meet sustainable energy production needs and meet this enormous growing demand in energy globally?
Yeah, I'll start with the bigger pieces of our operations and assets. We have established what we call the upstream GHG emission intensity reduction metrics, and making that very transparent and visible. For oil, gas, and flaring, and including methane, from 2016 to 2023. And we are on track to meet and exceed these metrics. We're also advancing GHG reductions through our emission reduction projects. So that's targeted towards carbon capture, use, and storage, energy efficiency, renewables, flaring, and methane reductions. And then more recently, our 2021 capital and expenditure budget includes $300 million for investments to advance the energy transition. Also, Chevron will invest $100 million in these carbon reduction projects that was committed to, and also $2 billion by 2028 to help meet our 2028 reduction targets. I know I threw a lot of numbers at you, but I think overall, we are very committed to making the sustainable energy production to meet this enormous demand.
Yeah, what might the global energy market look like a full generation from now? I mean, how will Chevron continue to lead in this space? And are there some innovations that your team is working on that you might be able to share?
I think in the next generation, the consumers are going to be asking for even more lower carbon options. And Chevron's investing in all the low carbon technologies to drive commercial and global scale. And I'll just throw out a few here. We're investing in renewable natural gas, which you're very familiar with, renewable diesel, renewable jet, hydrogen, and even renewable base oils. I'll share a few areas that we have led in. So over the last decade, Chevron's invested $1.1 billion in the carbon capture area to reduce greenhouse gas emissions intensity. And these projects are primarily in Canada and Australia, but the nearly 5 million metric tons per year is reduced. And that equates to about 620,000 U.S. homes' annual electricity usage. So I think we are able to generate scale in this space. And another example is that more locally, the Kern River Carbon Capture Project. We were awarded a project from the DOE to pilot technology that captures carbon dioxide from post-combustion gas. And this is a collaboration with Svante and the National Energy Tech Laboratory. The technology will be tested in our home state at our Kern River facility in San Joaquin Valley. And this is going to have a 30-ton per day plant for a six-month operational trial, which is super exciting because it really takes a lot of partnership to make these trials happen.
Yeah,
and another one that we shared at our Investor Day, we're collaborating with Schlumberger New Energy, Microsoft, and Clean Energy Systems to develop a bioenergy with a carbon capture and sequestration project in Mendota, California. And the expectation is net negative emissions when fully operational. And this will store about 300,000 tons of carbon dioxide annually. And what that equates to is the emissions emitted from 65,000 U.S. homes from electricity usage. So another project that we're very excited about, and overall, as I mentioned earlier, Chevron aims to lead the industry on greenhouse gas emissions reporting because what gets reported is measurable. Mm-hmm. And Chevron recently announced an agreement with Pavilion Energy to deliver carbon footprinted LNG cargoes from our business in Gorgon, Australia to Singapore. And the ability to monitor emissions and activities from the wellhead to the point of delivery is super important. And we're using this data to work with partners like the World Business Council for Sustainable Development. Mm-hmm. And that translates to developing standardized, data-driven carbon footprinting methodology. It's the first for the industry. And I think it's another great example on how Chevron can lead in this space.
Yeah, that's fascinating. We could do a episode on all of those different projects, probably. What do you see as the role of natural gas in this new energy world? I should say. Conventional and renewable. We hear a lot about renewable, but is natural gas still going to be part of the mix?
Yeah, I think obviously RNG will play a big role in this new energy world. And as we look to transform energy systems worldwide, conventional is still going to play a part because of the infrastructure. And I think if we look out far enough, the potential of this infrastructure can be deployed to support future hydrogen development. It can improve the resiliency of our low carbon energy supplies. I think there's tremendous opportunity to leverage what we currently have and not look to build a completely new system. And so from a supply chain perspective, how can we be efficient in delivering reliable energy as affordable as possible?
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about flexibility and the need for flexibility in meeting some of these increased demands. Again, the wife mentioned earlier, forecasters are saying the world's energy demand could increase by a third in less than 20 years. So, you know, as an energy delivery company as well, you know, you need to worry about resiliency and redundancies, and, you know, especially in light of the deep freeze crises that we witnessed just a little bit ago this past winter. Do these energy delivery realities require an all of the above approach, and can they still be sustainable?
Yes, I will address the extreme weather piece. It obviously has shown to challenge the resiliency in our energy systems, and mm-hmm. and then highlighting the need for diversification of energy portfolios, right? And I think that's why traditional energy players like Chevron are dedicating efforts to decarbonize and increase renewables, our pillar number two that we talked about earlier. And Chevron Technology Ventures has a $100 million future energy fund a couple of years ago. And we've been able to see that innovative technologies that arm has been investing in for the future energy mix, to your point around diversification, and it's supporting the development in areas of energy efficiency, battery storage, autonomous vehicles. We talked a lot about carbon capture, and then most recently, nuclear fusion. So again, a pretty new space to me, but very exciting for the industry and for the company to be looking far out enough to diversify that future energy mix.
Yeah, for sure. I regularly remind people that every transportation solution has an environmental footprint. You mentioned a couple minutes ago, you were talking about the upstream and being able to monitor and be able to quantify, right, the emissions impact along the whole chain. How does Chevron evaluate its environmental footprint initiatives in that sort of light?
Yeah, I think it's important to align with the greenhouse gas metrics on an equity and commodity basis. We talked a lot about advancing the global net zero ambitions of the Paris Agreement. Mm-hmm. We recently published our climate change resilience report. I'm happy to share the link with you after the call if you haven't seen it. It highlights many of the projects that we talked about, but I think to summarize, the report, just some of the key things to walk away with is we expect to invest over $3 billion to advance our energy transition strategy. And the $2 billion of it is all on carbon reduction projects that, to your point, how can we evaluate Chevron's initiatives in that light? It is to make sure that these investments on low carbon technology, as well as a low carbon fund commitment, and renewables and offsets, all goes towards sharing our reduction metrics and how we track against those metrics. Because as we align with the intensity relative to 2016 levels, Chevron supports the well-designed climate policy and believes the policy should achieve emissions reductions as efficiently and effectively as possible, at the least cost to different economies in the world. And Chevron supports carbon pricing, innovation, and efficient policies. I think we want to be a big player in supporting the well-designed methane regulation mm-hmm. and other key emitting sectors. Well, actually, we are proud to be a U.S. industry leader in managing methane emissions and responsibly producing oil and gas.
Mm. You have a vast portfolio that you know a lot of toes in a lot of ponds, but focusing just on the RNG space, because that's what really motivates so many of our members. What are some of the partnerships that Chevron's made in the RNG space of late that you might be able to share, and how might some of those grow over the next several years?
Yeah, I'll start with CalBio Energy. In 2019, we teamed up with CalBio and dairy farmers to form this JV venture. And it has produced online gas, and we market dairy biomethane as a vehicle fuel for heavy-duty trucks, buses, and eventually off-road and farm equipment. And in September of 2020, we announced our first gas production from our dairy farms in Kern County. Mm-hmm. So in following in October of 2020, Chevron and Brightmark announced the formation of another joint venture called Brightmark RNG Holdings. And the JV is developing projects across the U.S. to produce and market dairy RNG. And so the joint ventures will fund the construction of future infrastructure and commercial operation of these dairy projects in multiple states. And Chevron will purchase this RNG and market the volumes in California for use in vehicles operating on a renewable compressed natural gas. And looking forward, I believe there will be even more growth in this segment, as our senior leaders have communicated in our March Investor Day. We plan to grow our RNG supply by 10x from our baseline of 2020. And we are aiming to develop the whole RNG value chain and expect to have 30 Chevron CNG sites by 2025 in California.
That's great. Great to hear. Yeah. Hey, I appreciate your time with us today. Thank you so much for joining us and giving us a little snapshot into Chevron's sustainability efforts, especially in the RNG and natural gas space. And it's been an honor for me over the past 6 months to get to know you better. And I'm glad now many of our members and other supporters who listen regularly to our podcast will now get to meet you as I have. So thank you, Elam, for being with me.
Thanks so much, Dan. I really appreciate the opportunity to share the Chevron story. And it's been great getting to know you and your team in the last few months as well. So thanks again.
Yeah, and welcome. We are. I know we've been engaging already on some projects, and look to be able to provide as much support as we can to so that Chevron can reach the goals, some of those goals that you just shared with all of us. So thanks again for being with us, and thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in. For more information on NGV America, you can visit our website at ngvamerica.org. There, you can also sign up for our weekly newsletter. You can share comments with us on today's podcast via email at info@ngvamerica.org. And be sure to follow us on all your favorite social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. On behalf of Elam Yeo and her Chevron team and the entire NGV America family, I'm Dan Gage. Thanks again for joining us. You just experienced the Fast Fill. Until next time.